Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and we have another two-hour session of Zero Point Radio. My background is in psychology as a clinical forensic psychologist. I've studied in a wide range of mystical and esoteric teachings and modern science and modern physics. In this radio show, I try to provide a unique perspective on the enigmas of human consciousness and looking at the mystical dimensions of the heart. The basic teaching that's put forward through Zero Point Teaching, firstly, is that the human experience of consciousness and self are established within the heart, and this is elaborated in the spiritual teachings of the human race in all different traditions, that your true self is within the heart. And the egoic or personality nature is regarded as conditioned into the mind. So the mystical path at one level is the disillusion of the false mind into the lotus of the heart, and learning to awaken in the heart and live more consciously through this process. Also arguing that there's a whole higher dimensional physics to the heart. What I've attempted to do in my work is take the teachings of the mystics and look at them in terms of modern physics and ask, how could what the mystics say actually be true? For instance, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, I am the self seated in the hearts of all living beings. And the idea is there's within the heart is both the Supreme Lord, or the Paramatma, and the individual self, the Jiva Atma. The Paramatma is described as infinite, and the Jiva Atma is described as infinitesimal. So the concept there is that there's an infinitely small point source of supernal light within the heart, and that is the self. It is as if each individual has a divine spark within them. So what I've done through the last 20 years is try to look at this as a serious idea and say, well, what could be the quantum physics and science of zero point centers or divine sparks or jiva atmas within the heart lotus? Okay, we have two guests coming on today. First, I'll introduce a co-host, and then we have two guests. The first is Wendy Forrest of the Canadian Action Party, who will come on at 4:30 today for a half hour, and then Nikki Fisher from Vibration Regulation Training will be coming on for a half hour after that. And Jim, who's there in the background, he and I'll open and close the program. Okay, hi, Jim, how are you?
I'm fine, how are you?
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
So we got some guests on today, and you and I will just take about half an hour, and Wendy's going to be calling in at 4:30, so...
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, did you see the new... Oh, I meant to advertise my website for listeners is www.zeropoint.ca. Spelt out Zeropoint. So that's the website, www.zeropoint.ca. And I've just revised that. I haven't been working at that a lot lately because I've been revising my book on Blavatsky, which I'm very, very excited about and hope that it's going to be formally published within a few months. Did you get the new cover I did for... the new book is called God, Science, and the Secret Doctrine, and the subtitle is The Zero-Point Metaphysics and Holographic Space of H.P. Blavatsky. And that's what the book is about, the zero-point concept and looking at Blavatsky's ideas about the nature of space and their absolutely profound relationships between Blavatsky's teachings and the newest theories in holographic physics and information theory and ideas about the physics of black holes. So all of that is going to be in this new book, God, Science, and the Secret Doctrine. Quite a cover on it, eh, Jim?
Yeah, I'm just looking at it now as we speak. Yeah.
Did really you see it up on the website?
No, actually, I haven't.
I put it at the opening to my website.
Oh, okay.
I'm so excited about. You know the fellow, do you know who did that picture, Jim?
No, I don't.
That I used in my illustration? I got that from Stephen Hawking's book, The Universe in a Nutshell.
Oh, yeah.
And the fellow who does it, Nell Scherer, he was one of Stephen Hawking's graduate students who looked after Stephen Hawking and helped design a lot of the equipment for Stephen Hawking, who has ALS. You know, all the fancy kind of computer equipment and such. And now he works in England for a company that designs such equipment for disabled children.
Oh.
And I got his name from the book, from The Universe as a Nutshell, and I emailed him this week and asked him if I could use his illustration, and he's given me permission to. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. It's a fantastic picture. It really is very interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is on
Sorry?
This is on the website now, too.
Yeah, it's right at the top of the website. I put a new book cover. I'm so excited about it. I put it up there the first thing. I'm still working at it slightly. Not too much more to do. Well, I've been through it. I mean, I re-edited the whole thing once, and then now I'm doing another second whole re-edit. And then starting next week, it's going to go to a person who will set it up in Quark Express that then makes PDF files that can go to the printer. But in that process, at some point, once she gets it set up, I'll get a set of galley proofs that I can go through again and do another edit on it. So all I was meaning, I see I'm almost at the end of my second edit, and then for now that I'm going to lay it aside for a while. I've just spent like 4 to 6 months working up my writing because I just worked at my other books before that, coming out with new editions of them, and so I'm a little exhausted by it all. Need a switch of scene. And I'm very excited about the Theosophical Conference coming up in August. Are you still planning on coming to that, Jim? Have you tried to work that out at all?
I don't think it's going to be possible. I think I got a job the other day. So.
You did?
A new job, yeah. Well,
a new one,
because, you know, my old one is coming to an end. And so I'm sort of going to be in a transition phase at that point. Like, I'm starting actually Monday to work for another law firm, and I'm going to be doing part-time work for them. But through July and August, they want me to kind of try to give them as much time as I can, and I'm still trying to, you know, clean up things at the other job as it comes to an end. So I'm sort of, I'm actually going to be working more in the next couple of months, I think, than I want to in a way.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's a real good opportunity for me, actually. Yeah, it's interesting, you know. I'll tell you more about that later. But, so I don't think I'm going to be able to make it to California, which is unfortunate. This is in August is the conference in Petaluma, California.
Yeah, August 10th and 10th to 12th. Well, it should be exciting. I'll tell you all about it.
On the day of the conference,
Jim, on the Saturday, I'm actually have a radio show on that Saturday, which I'm going to do directly from Petaluma in California. And I'm going to draw from different presenters at the Theosophical Conference to come in and talk about aspects of their work in the area of theosophy.
Why don't you mention the conference now so that people who might want to attend, you know, just do you have the details of it?
Well, they could go to my website www.blavatsky.net, I think, has connections to the conference. And there's also another link. The Theosophical Society of San Diego has the information up on their website, but it skips. I can't exactly remember their address at the moment. But there is information if you go to the Zero Point website and go to upcoming events. And I'm going to try to link from that page to other places. I'll try to get to that within the next couple of days. I haven't worked a lot at my website lately. Most of my writing up there is pretty dated now. I've been working more at my writing.
What's the nature of the presentation that you're giving at that conference? What's the title? Do you have a title for it yet, or is it?
I hadn't thought of it until just now, but actually now you mention it, I think I'll name it after the book. I was really say, God, science, and the secret doctrine. And what I'll be talking about is the zero-point metaphysics of Blavatsky. Like, a lot of people who read the secret doctrine don't really grasp the concept of zero-point that she mentions through the secret doctrine, but not a lot. You have to kind of extract that zero-point teaching out of that work. So I'll explore her whole concept of zero-points and zero-point foundations for the laws of nature. And then the second part is her concept of holographic space. Like, there's an amazing quotation in the Blavatsky volume where she says, that there are like all these beings and worlds within our own space, but simply imperceptible to us. Mm-hmm. So it's like we live in a space which really is full of all these other possible worlds, even within our own space, but they're not perceptible to us. But for Blavatsky, see, Blavatsky's idea of space, she says, like, space as we ordinarily understand it, as extended in three-dimensional space, she says that is only illusory and doesn't really exist. And the concept she has of creation, when you really follow it through, you realize that in a way the idea is, well, one aspect is everything is everywhere, that everything is ultimately interrelated and part of one whole. And that wholeness permeates everything from the very beginning. So it's really only illusory that there's extension in three-dimensional space. Real space, as Blavatsky calls it, is this higher dimensional space, which she calls the eternal parent space. So it's a very subtle... The idea, in a way, is that a human being has a monad, like a star, a point of light, a monadic essence that exists in seven-dimensional hyperspace. This is the concept. And that monad in hyperspace has certain spin properties called spinergy by one theosophist. And the spinergy of that monad causes materials to be... materialized surrounding the central point, so that in a way the point becomes clothed in different bodies. So it's analogous to how our universe, scientists think that our universe emerged from a singularity condition. Well, the idea is similar, that we have that singularity condition within us, and in a way we grow within without from zero points. That consciousness and life within us emerges within without from a zero-point center. But they're very difficult concepts, eh, Jim. Like, they're things that take years to really begin to grasp.
I find it very interesting how, you know, just on a verbal level, and I know it's quite different in terms of the science of things, but it's interesting how it really anticipates, like, David Bohm's work by, you know, what, maybe 60 or 70 years, more than that maybe, in the sense of, you know, her description that everything is, in a sense, is everywhere and is in everything. It's basically the same idea that things are enfolded or holographically organized in some sense, you know.
It's exactly Bohm's thesis, eh? That was Bohm's fundamental thesis, the undivided unity of...
It's really interesting, too, because reading about his work, like, I mean, it's always something a little bit tricky in the sense that when you're listening to verbal descriptions of physics, you have to remember that this is all really formalized in the mathematics of things, and that you're sort of abstracting from an abstraction, in a sense, like verbally from a mathematical abstraction. But... like Bohm claimed that, you know, that he felt that the mathematics of his theory were quite sound, and Carl Pribram said the same thing about the mathematical aspects of his holographic model of the brain too, eh? So I mean, it's interesting that all these different convergences from different viewpoints are quite consistent, you know, in modern science with something that Blavatsky was writing about in 1888, and which presumably those ideas are thousands of years old, because they didn't really originate with her. Like, she got them from, esoteric sources or some
exactly.
You know, some sort of tradition. So it's like this didn't sort of spring out of her forehead, or even her heart. Well, maybe it did spring out of her heart on some level, but it's quite fascinating how that, as you say too, like people read this, but they don't kind of grasp it in a way. Like, you know, I mean, I put myself in that category. I don't know if I've never read The Secret Doctrine, so I couldn't say that. I don't think I would recognize. I don't think I'd have the grasp of the physics of it to understand it. But it's really quite astounding. And then
I think being exposed to my teaching on the Secret Doctrine, you would grasp it now as you read it. Like you would be far more prepared to read that book. Like in a way, I think I provide certain keys useful for people to apprehend what she's really saying. Because she didn't have the language in her. The eternal parent space now, that concept, you know.
I think that's where your work is really useful, because I think you're pointing to like correspondences and you're speaking in two different languages. You're speaking in terms of modern science, but also you're speaking in terms of the esoteric and secret teachings of all ages. And that's what's really interesting about your work, is because if somebody who wanted to pursue that could start with your work and kind of work backwards into Blavatsky, it's somebody who had a science background, for instance. And I would say that it's funny, because I've been doing more and more reading and writing about the whole kind of history of Western science over the last 400 years, and how we've kind of arrived at this mechanistic, materialistic, reductionistic perspective on things, and how it's really quite an arbitrary historical convenience, in a sense, or convention that's arisen. And it's not really, I think people think that this describes reality, and I think a lot of scientists do, but it really doesn't. It describes a partial aspect of reality for a variety of reasons, everything from theological reasons to political reasons to moral reasons to just ignorance. You know, I mean, there's a variety of forces acting on this and creating these conditions. And really, when you look at consciousness in terms of that scientific perspective, you realize how modern ideas about consciousness and psychology and philosophy are completely locked into a set of reinforcing assumptions that really take you away from the very essence of consciousness. And that's why you have to go back to the esoteric and mystical teachings to overturn that. Like, you have to kind of undo a lot of your thinking and your assumptions about things. I see that more and more clearly in almost all of the modern theorists. When I read them and I hear them talking about consciousness, I realize they don't get it in any way, shape, or form, you know, which is...
Yeah, there's so many wrong ideas about consciousness.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I think like your work is extremely valuable, at the very least, just to challenge these assumptions. You know, I mean, I'm quite convinced in my own mind that this is right. You know, I'm not open-minded about this. I'm quite clear in my own mind that I know what I know, and I think I understand. And I think that people
say, like, you've come to your kind of feeling of like knowing it through 20 years of studying it. It's not like
30,
like you just believed it. It's not that. It's like comparing it with everything else you know, looking at all the enigmas of science, your own inner self-study. You know, it's all these things make it inherently more and more obvious, seemingly obvious, I think. The heart
precisely.
It makes sense of everything. There's nothing that's incompatible with it, but otherwise you got all these enigmas, like how no scientist can explain how the brain produces consciousness. There's no evidence for it, you know, not that I can provide evidence that the heart does, but certain ideas of the heart doctrine you can validate in your own inner experience by simply being aware of yourself and cultivating awareness of your own awareness, and you begin to realize the kind of, I mean, you can experience the awakening of the heart, and beyond that, you can experience consciousness throughout your being, and you can experience consciousness completely separate from your body. So you can have all kinds of experiences that show that consciousness is not simply a secretion of the cortex.
It's interesting, too, because, you know, Blavatsky, that idea of a single unity that underlies or is behind everything, and in which everything eventually resolves, and from which everything originates. Eh? Like when
yeah.
you really look at that versus some the modern scientific kind of reductionist perspective, where you're trying to build everything up, you realize that I was reading something, and somebody said, really. You know, if you're going to take that materialistic perspective and you say that, you know, consciousness and life emerge from these simpler molecules which become atoms, or atoms which become molecules, which become cells, which become bodies, you know, which eventually somehow make this magical transition from being supposedly inert and insentient to some sort of sentient life force. It really is a metaphysical assumption of the largest kind to assume that these things emerge. Whereas the other way around, if everything comes out of a unity and is really propagating and going through different levels and coming out of this unity and becoming less and less conscious and you know farther away from that unity, that's actually to me, the more I look at it, the more that's a lot more logical way to look at things. Like it makes perfect sense to me that things come out of a unity rather than everything's building up from the bottom up, you know.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. And I mean, you even see it in science. In a way, science now confirms what Blavatsky said, in that Blavatsky said our universe differentiated from a minute point. She said that 100 years before modern scientists arrived at the singularity. So Blavatsky predicted that by over a century. So even in the concept that it emerged from a singularity in modern science, and anything that differentiates from a singularity condition remains interconnected in higher dimensional phase space. So
yeah.
In modern science itself, the full implication of quantum theory is that there is this inherent wholeness to the whole of the created universe, that's in a way everything is interconnected from the very beginning. You know, I read such an interesting quote. I was writing on some of the enigmas of quantum theory and how physicists reject non-local effects, whereas quantum theory implies non-local effects and entanglement. And it was interesting. I found a quote in Blavatsky in The Secret Doctrine. She actually uses the phrase non-local effects and says that
really?
There is nothing that is local.
Well, yeah,
she says
yeah,
there's
exactly.
nothing that is local. Nothing's local.
Yeah.
You think it's local, but that's only like for Bohm taking things in the explicate order and failing to see any of the subtle interrelationship. So Blavatsky says there's nothing that's local effect. Everything is non-local.
Yeah, Bohm writes about postmodern physics, saying that, you know, that really, like, the mechanistic viewpoint is much he says people form the mechanistic philosophy on the basis of fairly crude observations, which demonstrates the danger of deciding a final philosophy on the basis of any particular observations. Even our present observations may be too crude for something still deeper. And then he goes on to say that, you know, that really the mechanistic viewpoint is limited and really doesn't describe the reality of what in 20th century physics has discovered. And as you say, the idea of non-locality is one of like those critical elements that really shows the whole limits of the materialist perspective. We really suggest the idea of higher dimensional levels of consciousness and being, and like the great chain of being, which is like the most ancient idea in the secret teachings of all ages, and out of the unity comes the many, and it all really is quite consistent, you know, with that perspective.
Yeah, you'll really like some of the new materials I have in my Blavatsky book. Really felt I penetrated the zero point teaching a lot deeper, and it was from reading a couple Scientific American articles on black hole physics and the new holographic paradigm. And one of the articles, it was an analysis of information theory, and the physicist saying, if you get right down to the Planckian unit, like the smaller and smaller volume of space, and he questions how much information can be contained in an extremely small volume of space down to Planckian levels. And it turns out that if you have a mini black hole down at Planckian length, it can, within it, it can embody huge amount of information within a minute mini black hole. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, in Blavatsky, when she says how the universe is created, she says there are seven invisible holes dug in space.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I read
okay,
that.
So it's like there's holes dug in space. So the physicist's concept of how this huge amount of information might be stored at Planckian levels, down at zero-point levels, somehow having to do with black holes, that's what Blavatsky was saying. She says there are these seven invisible points, holes dug in space, and it's through the mechanism of these zero points that the spiritual intelligences of higher planes of being, they act within without through these zero point dynamics to create the world around this central point. So everything is spun as a web of spirit and matter surrounding a central vacated space. But Blavatsky actually says it's like a seven-dimensional black hole. That's the kind of concept of what Blavatsky says is the basis of the universe. Or, and then within the human being, your monadic essence is like a little element that has seven holes within it. And I go into more detail. Some of it's just too complex to explain too simply, but that's people have to buy the book. I want to try to come back to that over the next while, though. And through the month of July, I thought Jim would take both radio shows in July to and have on a number of theosophical presenters who are going to be at the conference and talk about different aspects of Blavatsky's work. Because my expertise is really in this metaphysics of the secret doctrine. Eh? But Blavatsky's writing is like so vast, like on history and evolution and paranormal phenomena. So there's so we'll have some other people come in to explain other aspects of Blavatsky's work through the month of July. I notice we're coming up to 4:28, so just anticipating that Wendy will be calling in. Maybe I'll wait. She's not there in the background. Okay, maybe I'll wait as soon as I hear that she's joined us, and we can switch over. Yeah, so I hope people have a look at the inspiring picture on my website, God, Science, and the Secret Doctrine. I think this book is like 30 years past the Tao of Physics. I hope it's a very seminal work that will influence other theorists to consider more deeply other aspects of the esoteric tradition. Like in ways, Capra's book is still valid today. Jim, it was like an excellent, excellent book.
Oh, yeah,
largely
yeah.
based on Bohm, and a lot but more dealing with Eastern philosophies like Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism.
Is Bohm in it? I don't think Bohm is in.
A lot of it's based on Bohm. Bohm's concept
I remember like there was quite a bit about Jeffrey Chu and bootstrap theory. It's been a long time since I read it actually, but and that just the whole idea of the correspondence between the worldviews of modern physics and the ancient Eastern teachings was kind of the central idea of it. And I saw Capra actually give a speech when that book first came out. He's a wonderful speaker, too. Anybody listening ever has a chance to go and hear him speak, I highly recommend him. He's a very, very good speaker. And as you say, I'd say it's even more relevant today than, in the sense that the last 30 years of research has just kind of reaffirmed and reinforced what he was pointing to, I think, in the sense that it's certainly worth exploring these correspondences. And again, I would say that the link is consciousness, that's something that he really doesn't go into in that book in the sense in any depth, like the ideas of nature, consciousness, and how the
he doesn't touch on that. Yeah,
profound implications for our understanding of all this. I mean, I was thinking too, like when I finished my book that I'm writing right now, The Problem of God's Contracting Universe, about your work and about our perspective on these issues and science and religion. That I'm hoping that it'll have the same effect too, that people will really reconsider this whole, I would say, very phony debate between science v. religion. I think that it's...
Yeah, as it's a phrase in modern times, yeah.
It's a confusion of tongues, I would say, because I think people have a very limited understanding of science and religion, and both scientists and religious people and religious spokespeople, I think, have no idea of the profound implications of what a more fully developed understanding of the nature of consciousness turns this entire debate on its head and shows the limits, I think, of both kind of traditional perspectives in materialist science and fundamentalist dogma and religion. I think that both of them have to kind of shake off a lot of the dust that settled on them over the last couple of hundred years, and really kind of re-examine their basic assumptions about everything. And that's what I think is so exciting about this work, and is that it leads to a new synthesis and understanding.
I saw even the title of the book is like that. It's like God, science. So there's your kind of religion, science, and the secret doctrine, which kind of is what bridges them. It bridges. Yeah. It's a model of intelligent design. That's what Blavatsky. Like people argue, do you believe that God exists? And some say, it couldn't have been by chance. And others say it was randomness and chance and just the way it was. And there's kind of no debate. But Blavatsky provides an actual theoretical model of creation within, without, from zero points, in a way that can compare to complex ideas in modern physics. So it's not only saying there's intelligent design, but it's actually providing a model of what I call now divine micro-intervention. That God actually, in a way, that's to understand the idea of intelligent design, that these intelligent forces and intelligences act within, without, from zero-point levels.
Yeah.
So it provides an actual model. I didn't know if I heard something in the background, if we might have anyone join us there. Hello, Wendy? Okay, I guess not.
Okay. Just on that point, I mean, in a way, on a certain level, that's the subtitle of your book refers to the cosmological aspects of things, and the subtitle of my book refers to the psychological aspects of this, in the sense that mine is on the reality of knowing oneself, the universe, and the gods. And that kind of points to the idea that, you know, that was the aphorism which was over the temple of Delphi, a temple of Apollo at Delphi, was, man, know thou self, and thou wilt know the universe and the gods. And that idea, I think most people take that as some sort of metaphorical or poetical description of the value of self-knowledge, but I believe, that's an aphorism which captures a reality that's meant to be taken literally. If you understand the depth of what's implied in that very simple expression, "Know thyself, and thou wilt know the universe and the gods," because it leads to exactly what you're talking about the cosmological aspects of the divine micro-intervention and the intelligent design that's in Blavatsky's work and in other teachings.
Yeah. Take that concept. The microcosm embodies the same principles of design as in the macrocosm.
Macrocosm, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why when I began to realize, the scientists think the universe emerged from a singularity. Well, that seems more unlikely to me than the idea that a human being, life within a human being, might emerge from a singularity. I would have thought the fact that the huge universe emerged from a singularity would be seen more incomprehensible. But science accepts that. But they don't conceive that a human being might have such a zero-point life center within them. You know, another thing I realized, too, in my recent writings on comparing Blavatsky and science, I was kind of writing about, you could call the singularity the alpha point. And the idea is if the universe is expanding and if it ever contracts and collapses at the end of time to a singularity, that's called the omega point.
The omega.
Okay, so between the alpha and the omega. And then I was realizing in my writings, trying to compare Blavatsky in science, I realized, oh, the difference in Blavatsky is that she doesn't think that the point is only there at the beginning and end, but the point exists the whole way through. It's just invisible to us. It's just beyond our perception. It's not like it comes out of the singularity and the singularity is only in the past. No. The singularity is there the whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah, and that's really profound difference. Eh? Like you think of that.
Yeah.
That's a profound difference. And another thing I realized, see, scientists, in my recent reviews of this booklet, this is all new material added, scientists think it's mainly gravity that gives rise to structures in the universe. Like, how does a galaxy form? Well, they think there's a big cloud of matter, and it condenses according to gravity, and it condenses enough that then the sun bursts forth because of the heat and pressure. Okay? So science thinks that it's the influence of gravity which creates, like, galactic structures or a sun or a solar system. They think, you know, the Laplace model of the solar system. They think there was a cloud of gas and it kind of condenses into the form of the planets and the sun. So gravity is the primary formative forces. Okay, but no one thinks that something like the galaxy actually has a living center, and that the structure of the galaxy is really given by the nature of the living center. Like, the reasons why do galaxies are spiral disks? Why do they have the spiral movement? Now, scientists can't explain it because there's not enough matter in the universe, in the galaxy, to explain that rotary motion. So it's an enigma. Whereas for Blavatsky, everything has a zero-point center, and these zero-point centers are vortices, or a vortex of energy. It's not, so it has rotary movement inherent to it. So a galaxy, the reason a galaxy has rotary movement is not because as it collapsed according to galaxy gravity, it happened to, you know, there'd be more angular momentum and some of the mass that started turning due to material effects. No, for Blavatsky, there's a life center, and the rotation of the galaxy is due to the nature of that zero-point center. And they actually now, Jim, believe our galaxy does have a black hole center, and they believe there may be a singularity at the center of that.
Wow.
So this, the idea that Blavatsky says that living beings have zero-point centers, they even imagine now that for our galaxy. So again, a lot of Blavatsky's ideas are particularly current in ways.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to mention to you, I've been reading David Ray Gurdon's book, and I'm not even actually sure of the title of it. I've got a couple of his works, but I read one called The Reenchantment of Science, which he edited, and which is Perspectives on Postmodern Science is a kind of thing, and Bohm's in there, and Rupert Sheldrake. But he has another book, which is it deals with religion and science, and he subscribes to the views of Alfred North Whitehead, and one of who was a scientist turned philosopher, who essentially rejected the idea of materialism as being an adequate scientific set of assumptions, because I don't know Whitehead's work, so I'm just kind of giving a sketch here, but I think his essential feeling was that on some level everything is sentient and intelligent. Like, he rejects the kind of thoroughly mechanistic viewpoint. Now, what's interesting from our perspective is that David Ray Griffin does a very thorough critique. He talks about the mind-body problem and the dualistic versus the strictly materialistic viewpoints, and he talks about the history of science. I talked a little bit about that in a previous program, a very, very interesting discussion of the history of science, and points out that really the the Hermetic Kabbalistic tradition was just as important in the rise of modern science as the rise of the actual materialist viewpoint, that this is generally not acknowledged by materialist scientists today, that the Hermetic and Kabbalistic tradition was very important. And he talks about a whole variety of assumptions and problems with these underlying modern science. And one of the main ones he talks about is non-locality. And he's very sympathetic to parapsychological research. And I'm just reading his chapter now on parapsychological research. I think it's one of the most interesting things I've ever read, like a real questioning of the critics of parapsychological research, and it's fascinating. But he says that's one of the main assumptions is of non-locality, but it doesn't really stand up to scrutiny. And in a non-local understanding of things, you'd have a very different understanding of the reality of psychic phenomena. And I was thinking, you know, that the only thing that's not, that I see in his work is that he doesn't talk about kind of the mystical. He makes references to mysticism, but he doesn't really talk about the idea of different levels and of hierarchy of consciousness in the universe and on an individual level. It's kind of like the missing piece. Like your work is entirely consistent with what he's talking about and with Whitehead's perspective, but I think there's an added dimensionality to it that's not in his work, but it's really fascinating. And
that's the same David Ray Griffin who does the 9/11 books.
David Ray Griffin is my new hero. He's a brilliant scholar. I mean, he was quite an acclaimed theologian and philosopher, and now he's got several books out on 9/11, and his latest book is 9/11 debunking 9/11. He takes on the popular science magazine article which criticized the work of Steve Jones and the whole idea that the World Trade Center's couldn't possibly have collapsed because of that it had to be an explosion and that they didn't collapse because of the planes hitting them. He takes on that popular science, popular mechanics, I think was the
fraud article. I read that.
Yeah.
If you know anything about it, I mean, it was written a while back. But anyway, if you know much about it, every aspect of it's been discredited over time.
It always strikes me. It seems to me like that this is like, to me, this is just like history repeating itself, because it's like the Kennedy assassination. It's all these things come out to explain the Kennedy assassination and how all these conspiracy theorists are wrong. And I mean, they're so lame. I mean, it's just so incomprehensible that anybody would actually buy this, these critics of the critics,
It's interesting as a psychologist seeing it. It's like the psychopathology of a nation. It's like people live with this kind of huge lie between like the American dream and we're spreading democracy and protectors of the world, and then there's the reality, reality, and there's that complete splitting in the American psyche. I mean, I see the whole American and world psyche almost like has been severely traumatized by everything that happened since 9/11, and is going to be much further traumatized, in my view, in the upcoming months and years. I think we're in such a precarious position today.
It's funny because in a way, I mean, I don't really agree with that. I see it on a certain level. I agree with you, but in other ways, I think it's like, well, I just think it's a, and this is where I do agree with you. I think it's like the biggest, boldest, most meaningful step in it, but a whole series of things that have gone on for the last 50 years that are just, they're all incomprehensible and indefensible. I think it's been going on in a variety of ways for a long time that people have been.
There was never a smoking gun so clearly obvious that kind of anymore.
That's where I disagree with you. I mean, I think there have been lots of smoking guns, and I think that one of the things is that I think now with the internet, let's put it this way, if the internet had existed when JFK had been shot, I think that the whole aftermath of that would have been very different. I think that it wouldn't have had to wait until the late 70s to have a House Assassinations Committee. I don't think they would have gone on that long. I think that there would have been a bigger challenge to that. I think the Vietnam War would have ended a lot faster too. You know, I mean, that's one thing where the internet really is a force of democracy. There's a lot of things about the internet that are quite objectionable, but that's where it really is a force of democracy and freedom of information.
Yeah.
Is that it gives people networks that they can bypass the official version and the propaganda machinery that passes as the mass media, you know, in the Western world. You know, it's like, you know, I used to think it must be really weird living in a place like the Soviet Union, you know, where you had Pravda, which is like the official propaganda machinery of the state, which is just complete lies. Everybody knew it was BS, but you know, like, I mean, that's where we are now. You know,
we thought we had free speech.
I thought it was slanted at times, but I never thought it was so completely, unbelievably ridiculous, and that's the way I look at it
intentionally.
Now.
I see it as a Nazi propaganda machine. That's what
it's intentional on different levels. You know, like, I don't think it's any one thing. I think it's a whole variety of things. But at the end of the day, there are malicious forces at work out there that psychopathological forces at work who have money and power and who control a lot of things and shape a lot of opinions and take people off onto silly, stupid topics that really have nothing to do with reality, you know? Like, I mean, and the sources of disinformation more than equal the sources of information. That's the problem, you know, and they own the newspapers and the television networks, and they put these nincompoops on television who, you know, scream and yell about all these things that are just complete, you know, and utter nonsense and have absolutely nothing to do with reality. And, you know, we're supposed to take these people seriously. Like, I've gotten to the point where, like, I just, you know, I can't even listen to these people. I just find them completely and utterly ridiculous, you know. Like, I mean, me too.
I mean, I still watch them.
It's kind of like morbid fascination. It's like, you know, when are you guys actually going to, you know, if you ever touch down on Earth and have any contact with reality, give me a call. But, I mean, it's as you say, as a psychologist, it's kind of interesting to watch it, but it's quite horrifying at the same time. You know, it's very disturbing.
Yeah, once you get your unconditioned by it, and then you can turn it on and you can just see what they're doing. It's so shallow. You see right through it. You know?
The emperor has no clothes.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, we're so lucky, like BBS radio and other internet radio shows and alternative programming, where, as you say, you know, it's a tool of, you know, free speech, democracy. And I'm very concerned that, you know, there's going to be another major state-sponsored terrorist act in the States. And one of the things, all the boogeymen, the Al-Qaeda, are going to be on the network, and they're going to shut it down. That'll be there, you know, when martial law comes in and the new world elite, new world lunatics try to take their next step. They'll have to shut it down. I think they're using it now to gather information.
Did you happen to notice that now that the in Iraq that the American government is arming certain select Sunni militias and troops to fight Al Qaeda?
Oh, it just gets worse and worse. I mean,
But do you understand the implications of that? Like, I mean,
yeah, that, well,
this
they,
is, it's this
if
is
they
like
turn on them.
This is like out of Catch 22. Now, wait a minute. The Sunnis, these are the people that, some of whom were with Saddam Hussein, okay? Now, Al-Qaeda wasn't in Iraq until the Iraq War was started by the Americans. Now they're there. So now they're arming the people who they disarmed when they invaded the country
to fight Saddam Hussein.
You know, it's like, you know, you couldn't dream this stuff up if you tried it. And, you know, it's so completely absurd, you know. And, I mean, of course, who created Saddam Hussein? Well, the Western powers, as a balance to Iran, because the Ayatollah was in power in Iran. But who created the Ayatollah? Well, the Western powers, by creating the Shah of Iran, who was every bit as bad as Saddam Hussein ever thought about, but was our guy over there.
And they disposed of the democratic government, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. They overthrew the elected democratic government of Mossadegh in 1954. And the CIA profile of the Shah of Iran, before they put him on the throne, said, you know, this guy's a whack job. He's a complete nut. And they were really worried about putting him in power, but they went ahead and put him in power because they wanted to control the oil. So you have to, you know, so when you're talking about Mideastern madmen, which is, of course, what Saddam Hussein suddenly became once he was no longer the friend of the West,
This was the original one.
I mean, historically...
Nutty. The United States has exported terrorism around the world for all known history almost, you know?
I mean,
they're the main exporters of terrorism in the world now. They've become the terrorist state, the number one most world-feared terrorist state.
Well, it was funny, not that
Americans had intentions at all. I like Ron Paul because he's just so sensible. He says, that's not the American way. You know, the traditional conservative values is non-interventionism. You know, what is this thing where America thinks we have to police the world? So you force the American people into poverty so grandiose elites can achieve some kind of world dominance, you know? That's not the American way. That's not what America was bound on. You know, that's not what the American people support. It's not. You know, that's not why young men and women join the forces. You know, who wants to be in the armies of the barbarians? You know, there has to be that deceit that you're doing. It's like the Milgram experiments, how you give people electric shocks till the point where you almost think you're dead because you have an authority who tells you that's what you're supposed to do or something. Hello, do we have a call here?
Hi, Christopher. It's Nikki Fisher.
Oh, hi, Nikki. I'm going to just finish up with Jim, and if you just hold on a moment.
That'd be great.
But before we leave this topic, Jim, I did want to mention there is a big 9/11 Truth Conference in Vancouver the next weekend. For three days, they got like 30, 40 major professionals, scientists, philosophers. I don't think David Ray Griffin is there, but a number of other very prominent people. So it's a huge thing going on in California this next weekend. If you go to the Canadian Action Party.
Vancouver or California?
Vancouver.
Yeah,
probably best outside of the States, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, that's on this weekend, and I hope they're going to try to make their conference available through the internet somehow.
They are
trying to work that out. We've in some radio shows on the internet where we've been aware of this. But anyway, that's coming up. So we're going to switch focus a bit, and I've invited Nikki Fisher on today, and Nikki has a website at www.vibrationregulationtraining.com. And Nikki has developed some new methods for helping to ground bodily energies and such, and she's going to talk about that today, and she's works in the area of autism. Hi, Nikki. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Christopher. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Maybe you can tell us a bit about your work, and then we talked that you would actually then guide us through an experiential exercise.
Absolutely. Well, I am, just a quick background on myself, I was in the finance and insurance world for pretty much most of my career, and the business that I was in, I had my own business, and the business that I was in, the industry was really changing. And that was in 2004, and I had to make some kind of a decision whether to stay in the business or just maybe do something altogether different. And my nephew has autism, and I really wanted to do something that had a meaning and that mattered. So I decided to create a nonprofit magazine about autism called The Autism Perspective, which is a magazine about options and perspectives about autism without taking sides.
Yeah.
I started to look into the industry as I was first wanting to provide this service so that people could get more information to make more informed decisions. And I saw how it was just such an industry and how so many people were so, you know, bent and stuck on their way of trying to say something will work or not work when we're all so different. You know, everything works differently on each person. So I created that magazine, and it, I just met some just amazing people and found out a lot about a lot of things and ended up helping myself in creating VRT, which is vibration regulation training, to help myself. It's a method that I just taught myself just basically just to survive. And it now can be taught and trained and teach everybody, you know, nearly instantaneously.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know whether any of your listeners have heard about it, but I am. You want me to go into my story a little bit?
Just in passing, I did have a question. The autism rates have just soared, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard the other day 1 in 150 children
right,
now
right.
have.
Well, I have autism. I have my own unique different theories about what I believe about autism, just based on meeting and just dealing with so many amazing people. I mean, these people with these high frequencies are unbelievable. And when you can learn to neutralize the disruptions in your frequency, like what I train my body to do, you can be with these people. And they're amazing. So, I mean, I was going to get into that a little bit later about what my beliefs are about autism, but
So I was going to say your methods are then like so valuable to not only to an autistic child and trying to use them with a child, but like for the worker,
everybody who's living here, living here on planet Earth. You know, we're all just creatures that are living here on planet Earth, and our frequencies need the Earth for survival as much as the Earth needs our frequencies to survive. And I believe that too many people with high frequencies have disconnected, and the Earth and humanity is suffering. And more sensitive people are being sent here to help balance out the shift that's happening, because fear and greed have ended up at opposite ends of the spectrum. And people can't cope anymore. There's more people that are medicated. There's more people that are gambling, you know, drugs, molesting, raping, stealing,
yeah,
beating. It doesn't really matter. I mean, now people are sniffing things under the cabinets. I mean, everybody is doing everything they can to try to neutralize the disruptions in their frequency because they can't stay connected to survive. I mean, look at all the kids watching video games. You could be talking to a kid with your face right at his ear, calling their name to come because dinner's ready, and they appear as though they're deaf. You know, they have trained themselves because they have an ability to hyperfocus at above average levels, well above average levels, on a single-minded concentration, and they can tune you out. And they're into the video game, and that's their way of disconnecting because they can't cope here because their frequencies are so sensitive that they flip out, and this is their way to survive. When you learn how to release endorphins and self-medicate, we do that in all kinds of ways. I mean, a person could be on the verge of, wanting to kill themselves, and they've been contemplating this for 3 weeks, and they're determined to do it today, and a friend calls and says, you know, what are you doing? Let me come and talk to you. I want to touch. So they end up coming over and talking to the person, and somehow they got on the subject of gambling, and the person was able to take the person who wanted to kill themselves out gambling, and the person is there, and the lights are bright, and everything is, you know, happening, and about a half hour goes by, and they realize they have not thought once about killing themselves, because they are in this place now where they learn to neutralize the disruption to their frequency by fixating on the gambling, and now you start to release endorphins. And then
so
you
you're saying
addicted.
Partly that people are drawn into these things like gambling or drugs and video games as a way unconsciously of trying to deal with these energy disruptions.
Or you actually, it just happened upon it. You know, I believe a lot of people are a victim of circumstance, because when you're not grounded, you're susceptible to any kind of shift that's happening in the alternating currents. And
yeah.
we're just a battery, you know, the AC and the DC. The DC we get from the Earth's electromagnetic vibration, and that's the current that runs our frequency, that's our own God-given frequency, that gets the energy in the alternating currents above the surface of the Earth to survive. So if you don't know how to regulate the energy that's coming in with your current that you need to survive, that runs the electrical system in your body, the whole central nervous system, and the energy, I believe, runs your lymphatic system and all the fluid in your body, if you've got not a good mix or not enough of one or the other or disconnecting completely from, you know, your frequency, you're going to have havoc. I mean, our bodies are going to break down and short circuit and malfunction. I mean, have you thought about, like, when there's an electrical storm and a wire's been cut? I mean, it's flopping all over. The energy is just, it's out, it's in the alternating currents, and it's just doing everything it can to survive. The minute it's grounded within the Earth's electromagnetic vibration, it's back to normal again. But
I was just thinking that it's interesting. If you have a lot of lightning and you go out afterwards, it's like so fresh and nice out.
Yes.
It's like maybe that direct current from the lightning.
Exactly.
Helps
well, what
to
happens?
Reestablish the direct current and disrupt all this alternating.
Yes. Well, that's the thing that I think is what VRT can do, and we can help humanity, and everybody can do this. I just figured out a way to do it. Every single person can do this, and I had to figure out this way because in 2003, I was about to face my third neck surgery in a three-year time span. I mean, it was like, how many more surgeries could I have had? I already had my knees operated on, both knees. I already had my wrist operated on. I already, within those two surgeries in my neck, I had a shoulder surgery. So this would have been my fourth surgery in 3 years.
Wow.
And I was in such pain. My neurotransmitters had gone haywire. My body would not respond to the pain, stopping the pain. It was getting worse and worse because I was hyper-focusing on it, you see, and I couldn't stop. And once you train yourself, it's like a person who is missing a limb and their hand still hurts. How is that possible? You don't even have your hand anymore. Well, you don't have to have your hand anymore to have your electrical system create these patterns. And
I mean, the patterns are all ready there before the hand's removed, and
exactly.
They're still there.
Exactly. That's, so you've got your electrical system that's sort of like this automatic system. It's an autonomic nervous system. You know, you don't have to say, okay, breathe. You don't have to tell yourself to swallow, you know, take your food down your esophagus.
Yeah.
It's all automatic. So that works on the energy current that comes in through the Earth's electromagnetic vibration. And the energy that comes in through the alternating currents is really disruptive. So if you don't know how to neutralize the disruptions, like the lightning, I mean, people think that the atmosphere is nothing. Well, I mean, how can a lightning strike and go from way up there and you can see it go all the way down there? There's things out there that not everybody can see or feel, but a lot of people can see it and feel it because they've disconnected and taken themselves to these different dimensions to survive because they can't cope here. I mean, to me, a schizophrenic is the most amazing person. These people are they're so disconnected because they can't cope here, but they are such people at peace that it doesn't take anything to disrupt their frequency. And they have the gift and ability.
I'm not sure how you mean that. My experience with schizophrenics, I wouldn't have thought they were at peace.
But yet, well, when you meet a schizophrenic and your frequency is not disrupted, you don't disrupt them, and they can just be. So schizophrenics will stop and talk to me when I'm walking down the street because they can. When there's no disruption. So that's what I mean.
See what you're saying now.
Yeah, so these people who can't cope are the sensitive people with the high frequencies. And, you know, all these people, they connect with dolphins, they connect with animals because animals have higher frequencies than humans. So these people can connect with these people, but since... I mean, I believe that so many diseases and so many other problems in the world are because we're so out of balance, and the people with the high frequencies aren't here anymore. So they're not neutralizing the lower frequency people to bring balance and harmony. Does that make
sense? Well, we want to come in a moment to like the actual techniques you use, and you're going to take us through a process. I had one other question. I've always been really taken by the idea that we absorb kundalini energy through the root chakra. And I've always felt like something working in the garden. When I work in the garden, I feel my
right.
I feel the kundalini through my root chakra.
Well, you know what happens?
Would you connect that to the...
Oh, totally.
Earth?
Totally.
Yeah.
See, what happens is that what I did was I found this way to survive because I didn't want another surgery, and I had developed thoracic outlet syndrome. They were going to cut my scalene muscle, which attaches to my clavicle, off. I would have had this bunched up thing. They were going to take out my first rib, and I would have been deformed, but I would have done anything to help myself. And finding this way, I've spent the last now year really trying to understand what it was, you know, what I did and how I trained my body to never shift from my given frequency and live life in the alternating currents by surviving here on planet Earth in peace.
And by maintaining your stronger direct current.
Well, but,
that was partly how you cope with that disruptiveness of the AC currents.
Well, what I did was, I trained my frequency or your soul or your spirit, really however you see it, to neutralize any and all disruptions that are found in the alternating currents with the opposed direct current that's found below the surface of the earth. And I found a way to regulate the vibrations. I found a way to do this and ground myself so that I could get that feel, what you're feeling. See, most people have been able to find peace in the alternating currents. They would try meditation, gardening, like you say, yoga. When you can connect to your body, and by doing that, another way to describe that would be, you know, having sex. You know, when people find their rhythm, you know, when you find your rhythm and you start to take over, it stops. So you have to go back and let your body find its own rhythm. And when you bring yourself to a place of peace and grounding let's use your gardening, for example, you're really focusing on the garden, you're looking at everything, your mind is, you know, you're connecting. You're connecting to everything around you, and you're bringing yourself to a place of peace, exactly, and you get that feeling. So lots and lots and lots of people have learned to find peace in the alternating currents, yoga, meditation, Reiki, whatever it is, athletes, actors,
yeah.
dancers,
yeah,
anybody that can hyper-focus at above-average levels can find peace in the alternating currents. I could never. I never was able to meditate. I was never able to do yoga and feel anything. I couldn't do anything to bring peace to myself. Sex would be the only thing where I could actually feel that feeling that people would feel with endorphins. I mean, I was an athlete, and I never felt endorphins once. So I think it's because I couldn't find somebody else's way of doing it, you know, because people didn't invent, you know, meditation. Someone did that, and then people adapt that and take that on throughout the years. And adapt it to themselves, but it's still you're using other people's frequencies to find peace in the alternating currents and turning it into your own. So you can only get there. You can't stay there because you can't garden forever. You're going to have to do something
yeah.
else. So you can get there, but you can't stay there. With
yeah.
VRT, you find your own frequency first within the Earth's electromagnetic vibration, and then you take the energy in the alternating currents and you neutralize it through your body, and you can live with that feeling you feel when you're gardening forever. I never shift from my frequency. And because I don't shift, I'm living strong at my frequency, and it's a very dominant frequency. And when we meet other people, we always encounter a frequency disruption. And that's why when you meet someone, you either like them or you don't like them right away. You get that feeling of you feel good about them or you feel bad about them. And it depends on who has the more dominant frequency at the disruption that you met at. And the person with the more dominant, it could be somebody who's more at peace or somebody who's more at fear. And it just really depends on whose frequency is more dominant. You meet somebody and you like them right away and you think, God, I just feel like I've known you forever. Well, it's that frequency, they were stronger, and you get that feeling, and that's how you interpret it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and why don't you try to describe a bit or take us through an experiential process to use some of your methods here to, yeah.
Okay. Well, what I'll do is if everybody can, are they on speakerphones or how are they actually listening to the show? On the online?
Yeah, online, on computers.
Okay.
So
what everybody's going to want to do is stand up if you're sitting. If you can stand up, if you can't stand up, that's okay too. But
what you want to do is look down and look at your feet, and you want your heels to be kind of lined up underneath your hips. So if you're a little bit more wide-hipped, you want to have your heels wide. You don't want to have any strain on the outside of your hip, but you just really want your legs to hold you up. And then you want your heels into your hips, and open your feet up just a little bit so your toes aren't facing forward. They're kind of facing a little bit out. And you're going to want to let your body really just drop, and anybody who knows how to belly breathe, this is the perfect time to do that. You let your body just kind of drop onto your hips, and let your stomach just kind of stick out, just kind of think of more like a Buddha, but don't arch your back. You know, push the air in your stomach out with your back going, getting pushed out and your stomach pushed out. And you want to think of your belly button as your mouth, and you want to use your sphincter muscle in your rectum and just kind of let it, kind of like open up a little bit underneath you and feel your belly button and your breathing in and out. You're going to want to take your hands and you're going to want to put them in front of you, just kind of hanging in front of you, but have your palms flat to the ground and fingertips should be pointing forward as though I was standing in front of you. Your thumbs should be facing each other. And just nice and easy breathing and kind of just let your body slightly move. Just let it move whatever way it wants to move, and just keep with your belly breathing and just focus on your belly button as your mouth. So you want to keep your stomach full of air and just really keep it full of air. And at the same time, concentrate on your sphincter muscle and your belly button and try to get that connection. And just nice and easy breathing. And now people should start feeling some pressure underneath their hands to the ground. You want to feel that, just nice and easy breathing, and only focus. You want to hyper focus on belly button breathing and connecting with your sphincter muscle, and just nice and easy breathing. And that's all you really want to just focus on. And you should feel some pressure under your hands. And just nice and easy breathing. You start to pull forward, that means that the energy, it's too strong. So when you pull forward, push your sphincter muscle down to the ground and let yourself get pulled back. Don't pull yourself back. Let yourself get pulled back. And now let the air out in your stomach again. And just keep regulating the energy coming in through your belly button with your stomach nice and out, with the sphincter muscle on the ground, and keep breathing nice and easy. Okay, now if you get pulled back too far, that means you pulled your stomach in. So push your stomach out, but don't pull your stomach out. Don't use your body. Use those two muscles in your stomach and in your sphincter muscle to start to regulate the energy that's coming in with the current that's needed to regulate the energy coming in. And just nice and easy breathing. If your body wants to sway a little bit, let it sway. Let it do whatever it needs to do. It just starts to neutralize the disruptions. Everybody has their own disruptions in their frequencies, and everybody has their own interpretation based on the initial disruption. And when we meet people, sometimes that disruption, we're the more dominant frequency, and sometimes we're not. But when you can learn to neutralize the disruptions, and just keep breathing, when you feel it, you not only neutralize it for yourself, because it really wasn't your frequency, you found it in the alternating currents and started using it, you neutralize it for that other person too. Because it's frequencies just living in the alternating currents. They're not really yours. They become ours, and we interpret it based on that. So now everybody should be feeling kind of a coolness in their legs. What are you feeling, Christopher?
Definitely grounded in a certain way, and like I see how the exercise makes you wholly stronger in the lower part of yourself.
So yeah, I mean, we're like
it's like what I was saying about gardening or like I bounce on my root chakra sometimes to kind of stimulate it, like the area between your genitals and your sphincter muscles, like to be rooted in that part of your body. So it's very powerful to bring your consciousness to that part. And then the way you describe it, up to the navel, it's like you're bringing all that biological energy, you're kind of grounding it and making it strong in your lower story, meaning like your lower, from your heart down.
Right, and what you're doing.
So I found. I mean, it's a little awkward here because I'm holding the phone with my ear and such. But I feel stronger.
Right.
Within myself, I feel more grounded and clearer. Yeah.
Right. What happens is that because everybody has been trained to find peace in the alternating currents using other people's frequencies. Because anytime we learn, even going to church, you're going to church and you learn to go to church through someone else and you just learn to find a way to bring yourself to peace and that does it for you. Well, you can get there and that's why we go every week, or you can learn to stay in that way and never shift from this, because the energy coming in through our whole solar plexus, the belly button, that was our umbilical cord. When they cut the cord, you either lived or died. And that's where our energy comes in, I believe, and it mixes right up at the end of our tailbone at our rectum is where all of the nerve endings and everything starts. And what is the first thing that happens when you get scared? You suck your stomach in, which means you just cut off your energy. You tighten your butt muscles, which means you just cut off your current, and you get that drawn feeling in your face. You get that sick feeling in your stomach, when the boss calls you in the office or someone tells you they want a divorce, that feeling that you get, or bad news, it's the same thing. And what happens is, and how I train my body to do this, is that when our body's own innate intelligence, when we have a frequency disruption that's severe, our body will ground itself. It automatically will ground itself. That's why we get that pulled feeling to the ground, we get that sick feeling. Well, at that moment, when we're grounding, you either shift to peace, or to fear. You either learn to neutralize the disruption and shift to peace, or you learn to take on the disruption and shift to fear, and you get that feeling. And then you get better and better.
Yeah, as you become ungrounded then.
Nobody teaches you. We're born, and we have our frequency, and everything is fine, and then all of a sudden, somebody disrupts our frequency, and we don't know what to do. You get that scared feeling, and you don't know what to do. So you teach yourself with these self-taught coping mechanisms that no one taught you. And we're doing this when we're in the most fear possible. And we're making a life-changing decision to our frequency of how we're going to now interpret other people's behaviors based on how we have stored the cellular memory from that initial disruption. That's why people are misunderstand so many times and so many things. How many times have you tried to explain something to someone and then they say back to you what they think you mean, and you tell them, no, I don't mean that at all. And they just keep saying, yes, it is what you mean. Well, you've disrupted their frequency. They have their own stored cellular memory from the time of that same disruption to them. So that's how they see the world, through those filters, based on our own experiences. That's how we interpret our disruptions. So we, interpret people the exact same way, or events. So so many things are misunderstood. And when you learn to see what you see and have a feeling about it, as opposed to feeling what you see and making a decision based on how you feel about it, which means how you see your truth of what just happened, which might not be the truth at all. It's just the way
To really know your truth, you need to have a strong DC current established within you.
Absolutely. And
saying. And that if you have that established in you, then even all the AC disruptive frequencies don't penetrate. Like you can enough in your own. Sorry.
Well, they do penetrate. See, the difference is.
I didn't mean they didn't penetrate, but they don't throw you off. That your own energy.
Yeah.
It's like if I'm really centered and I meet someone who is psychotic, and I can just be there and not be thrown off and disrupted by it, then as you say, they can be most fascinating and.
Exactly.
And can open up and be very intelligent. And I've had amazing experiences.
You're right. And you know what about this, Christopher, that's so interesting is that there's two types of frequency people. There's people that can store disruptions in their frequency, and there's people that can't. And it's the people that can't store the disruptions in the frequency are the ones that need to help us. I learned to do this faster because I was around people with autism, and I got to practice neutralizing disruptions in my frequency around people that weren't disrupted at all. You see, these people have... They can bring themselves to peace. They can rock. They know how to get their rhythm back. They do whatever they have to do. They watch the same video. I mean, when they have a meltdown, they have the exact same meltdown every single time because that's how they train their body to neutralize the disruptions in their frequencies and bring themselves back to peace until they're disrupted again, and they just do it over and over and over. And eventually, depending on how well they, you know, are at self-medicating, they may never come back because I've been to some of these places with some of these amazing high-frequency people because I don't have as high frequency as them, but when we, you know, we're like a magnet, you know, opposites attract and likes repel. Well, when you were talking to that schizophrenic and you were able to get into a conversation with him, you weren't disrupting his frequency. So he could just be. He could just be. And I believe we have a kind of like a duty for humanity to... for everyone to learn to neutralize the disruptions in our frequencies so we don't disrupt people. And we can help ourselves and help other people by not shifting from your frequency, and you will shift other people because you won't shift and you'll have a dominant frequency and they will shift to peace. Because haven't you ever had like a screaming and yelling person and they just won't stop arguing with you and you don't ever tell them to stop and they just do? Well, you just had a stronger frequency, and it was more peaceful, and you just neutralized them, and they didn't argue anymore, and you just shifted into peace by yourself.
Yeah, it's interesting. It reminds me of an incident, a shocking incident that had happened to me years ago, and I learned some methods which to me is quite similar to aspects of what you've just taught us. I call it self-remembering and how I've learned to work with my breath. Like, you emphasize, like, it's called abdominal breathing, or you can go even lower than abdominal breathing, pelvic breathing, where you actually rise and fall below your belly button. Like, you can bring your breath right down into your body. And when I self-remember, meaning when I go about my life and I remember to try to be awake and conscious, I will work with my breathing to do exactly what you were taking us through, like bringing the breath down from into the belly and the abdomen. And I would also, sometimes I bounce a little bit on my root chakra, because yogis do that to kind of stimulate the root chakra, bring your attention to the root chakra, how you describe the sphincter muscles. So I learned years and years ago to kind of do that, just like work with my breath and work. I'd always uncross my legs. People cross their legs way too much all the time.
You know what?
Where I learned to kind of cross my legs and keep them on the floor and bounce on my root chakra, and would help me to kind of be present and to have a strong presence.
Right, right. And you know what? The cool thing about VRT, you know, vibration regulation training, is that I couldn't find any way to find peace in the alternating currents. It was impossible. And I was taking 800 milligrams of Neurontin 4 times a day to 5 times a day just to help redirect the nerve pain. It was so severe that I realized that I incorporated absolutely every single person's way, you see, because we all have our own unique frequency, and we all have our own way of finding peace. It's different than somebody else because we're all unique. But when you hyper-focus, like let's say you just want to just meditate, and that's the way you like to do it. Well, you have to, you know, do whatever it is that you have to prep for to do meditate, and then you can take yourself to that place. But like I said, you can only get there. You can't stay there. And when you learn to hyper-focus in these areas and you can be around a very dominant frequency that's going to ground you to such a degree that it's much easier for you to find it, because our bodies get into sympathetic resonance. And whatever is happening with my frequency is going to now happen with your frequency. And we're, you know, mirror neurons. All this kind of stuff's happening at the same time. And you can get there faster. And I believe it's the people with the high frequencies that are the teachers, because they already know how to do this. they just are doing it a way that their self-taught coping mechanism, you know, to take themselves to that place where they can disconnect to reconnect, to disconnect to reconnect. So the people...
Yeah. You know, even though it's like you could learn more practical ways of doing it.
Exactly.
Not always useful to be rocking.
Yes, everybody can do that. Can you imagine when I meet these people that rock and do all these kinds of things to try to get there, and I just show them how to just, this is like literally in like 1 or 2 seconds, show them that they can have the exact same feeling but didn't have to go through all that. I show them.
Yeah.
Neutralize the disruption as opposed to going with the normal body-brain trigger. The same thing with the person who's missing the arm is having this. It's the same pattern that your electrical system has not, you know, not changed yet because you're protecting yourself because you don't want the disruption. So you're doing everything you can to never let it happen. And you stay on hyper alert and you're hyper vigilant and it takes over your life. And this is a way, with VRT, you get a chance to kind of start over, get back the gift of life, which is your own frequency, and be able to not have...
Yeah, your own frequency. Yeah, be get established strongly in your own frequency, and then things won't disrupt you so much.
But do you,
Nikki, we have, I want to just throw it over. We have Jim in the background. I don't know if you'd heard the show before he came on, but Jim's the co-host there. Jim, I didn't know if you wanted to respond at all to the exercise or any questions or comments for Nikki.
Well, yeah, the exercise is interesting. I mean, I felt something, too. It's like you say, you feel stronger and more centered. And it's funny because many years ago, I had somewhat of a similar, it's hard to kind of describe, but I was having certain physical problems, and I worked out a way of, I thought, kind of dealing with these things energetically, and one of the ways was somehow establishing a connection between, my genitals and the sphincter and the ground, like that sort of like a force.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow grounding me. It's a very odd that, I'd almost forgotten about this. And I sort of worked on this practice. And I think it came from something I read in yogic teachings, but I can't even remember where I kind of got this idea that this was important. But it's very interesting. I guess the question I have is kind of about, for Nikki, is about when you talk about frequencies, I'm not quite sure exactly what you mean when you're saying that everybody has, you're saying everybody has a different frequency, right?
Right. And I mean, the Earth, I mean, it used to have a 2.5 Gauss, you know, magnetic vibration, electromagnetic vibration. It's now at 0.5, which is an 80% effective loss. And I believe it's because, you know, we're all connected through gravity within the Earth. I mean, that's why we're all pulled to Earth. And we need our frequency, which other people might call our soul or our spirit. It's who you are. And when you're living on the surface of the planet Earth in this body that it was given to us, we don't even know why it's our body, and some of you people like their body, don't like their body, but your soul or your spirit or your frequency can only survive if it has the energy and the alternating currents with the direct current mixed together. And that's what creates how we get to live here on the Earth. So the frequency, to me, I mean, people will always say things like, oh, you're on the same wavelength or those kinds of questions like that. So I just realized someday, and I haven't read anything, and that's another reason why I think that I've come up with a kind of a simple way to figure this out to help myself, and not hyper-focus on another person's way, because once you try to learn something using someone else's frequency, you try to do it that way, your way that way, but it doesn't force you to find your own frequency. And since I couldn't find it out there, I had to find it within the Earth, and for some reason, I was able to connect. During about a month, I had a decision to make whether to have that surgery or not, and I decided to keep going with it and just forcing myself. And I mean, for my process, I mean, I can now ground people just because I won't shift in a second. It doesn't take any time. But my training of this for myself, I had to go to every single place in my body where I had stored disruptions of the cellular memory of emotional pain, physical pain, It was such an excruciating process. I had to relive these moments, and I had never felt those feelings of despair, but I was determined to get through it, and I did get through it. And in that process, because I connected so much to the earth and open to the heavens and grounded to the earth, messages came to me. And I started changing my whole verbiage and really just kind of seeing things kind of for what they were, with the lightning, the strikes. I mean, we're all just energy, different forms of energy, and energy can survive. You need a current, you know, the AC and the DC. And like I said, I feel like we're batteries. I hope that answered your question. I really don't know. It just seems right.
Well, I guess I have another question, too, sure. Is about how this came to you when you worked in finance and before. Is that what you
yeah,
did?
Yeah, and I still have,
yeah.
Of course, a nonprofit through my insurance business, yeah.
Would you have thought this is kind of crazy?
If I would have heard myself talk.
Previous lifetime?
If I would have heard myself talk. Let me just tell you this. The interesting thing, too, is that I am not a religious person. I have an analytical mind. I like science. I've always thought the body was fascinating, and I've always asked people why they think what they think, and why people came up with some, you know, interesting ways of handling things. And I just always thought it was fascinating. And I've always been in search, and my mantra was why, you know, why did you do that? Why do you think that? All that. And I'm not surprised that I figured this part of it out just because I wouldn't stop. But if I heard myself talk, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I really would have thought I was maybe from the loony bin.
Yeah. If I heard myself teach 30 years ago from what I think now, I would have thought I was...
Yeah, I mean, some people look at me and it's like I'm certifiable. And now that I realize what it is that if you keep your frequency strong, connected to the current, you won't shift. And it's amazing. I mean, I never knew, because I have a strong frequency. Well, strong frequency means good or bad. I mean, fear or peace. It just matters who has a stronger frequency when you interact with them. So whenever I would meet people, I would, you know, like I said, like them or not like them, you'd get that feeling right away. But I could never understand how somebody I would meet knew that I knew they weren't telling the truth. And then it finally came to me, and I realized that even when you're on the phone and you're talking to somebody and you're having a great conversation and you're really into it, and all of a sudden they say something that you know is not true, well, you get that feeling because you know it's not, something triggered you in your cellular memory to tell you that that's what that means. Well, when we disconnect from our frequency by not telling the truth, and when you disconnect, you disrupt yourself. Well, when you disrupt yourself, you just disrupted the other person, so they know and they get disrupted. And then depending on who has a stronger frequency, they're going to disrupt you back. And that's what used to happen. If I'd be talking to someone, and I'd know they just were just completely an outright lie, and moments later I could get that feeling that they knew I knew that this was going on. And it was, I never could understand. And now I know, because I didn't neutralize the disruption. My frequency, if it was stronger, was dominant and overpowered them. And now they were feeling fearful because I figured them out. Or whatever would happen, or somebody would meet me and do the same thing. When you're not grounded, you're susceptible to anything going on in the alternating current. And I was telling Christopher that for me, it's much easier to be around high-frequency people to make your frequency get higher on its own. When I turn the microwave on, my frequency raises up as high as it is when I'm around somebody who has schizophrenia or autism or anything like that. It's the most amazing feeling, because when you can neutralize the disruptions, it's just pure energy in your body, and you're neutralizing it in your frequency. You're grounding it into the earth. The earth is now taking advantage of your frequency, too, because don't forget, we're all connected, and the earth needs our frequency to survive, and it's in trouble. I mean, we can see what's happening on the planet, and the people just killing people now for no reason. They're out of control because they can't cope.
Yeah.
See, nobody knows how to cope. And I believe, I mean, I'm starting a grassroots organization of, I'm going to be doing live webinars probably 3 times a week, and people could just sign on the internet, and I'm going to have a video camera, and I'm just going to ground people all around the world. And once you practice, and I'll show people how to practice this, you can start grounding other people. And just like that person that was screaming and yelling, and you never told them to stop, and they just did. People don't have to buy into this. It doesn't matter. If you won't shift and they're not grounded, they're going to shift because the dominant frequency is always accepted, no matter what. So I want to be able to let people know that this is possible. And if you help yourself, you know, I always wondered the saying, God helps those that help themselves. And like I said, I wasn't very religious, but now I see God in everything. And now I see everything because I don't have any filters. And I realized that saying because if I help myself by staying connected to my frequency and I won't shift, I will help others because I won't shift and they will. So we each benefit from each other without using our frequency to teach you how to do it, because if we use our frequency, like, you know, you go to the chiropractor, the acupuncturist, all these people help you, the psychotherapist, all this, but you go there, you learn to cope using their frequency, and now you go back home, and as long as you can maintain someone else's frequency, you're fine. But usually, our own body wants to go back to itself, and then we got to go back to those practitioners to help us, because we use somebody else's frequency to find relief or find peace. And once you learn to find your own frequency, you don't need frequencies in the alternating currents to bring peace to you. You can bring about peace in the alternating currents by neutralizing the disruptions. I think that we can shift the whole global ecosystems that's happening right now. I mean, look at the Indians. They would have a drought. What would they do? They would connect to the earth and do their powwows and rain dances, and what happened? It rained. So, you know, the theories and the concepts that I'm talking about are all just bits and pieces that are already happening in the alternating currents. It's just kind of putting it all together and actually living it. And I've been living this now for 3 years, and it's the most amazing place to be. Nothing will shift me from my frequency because I learned how to neutralize disruptions to my frequency with the energy and from the alternating currents and the direct current from the Earth's electromagnetic vibration. What do you think?
Chris? I think this... Have we lost Chris?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Very fascinating, very interesting what you're saying. I guess one of the questions I have is how do you use that when you're working with autistics or when you're with autistics?
Well, just like what Christopher was talking about, when you know, those people that store disruptions in their frequency and the people that... When, are you still there? So when you learn to neutralize disruptions in the alternating currents, you get to see life. I mean, it's the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me. I must have had thousands and thousands of disruptions in my body that were causing me so much pain and so much physical pain and emotional pain, trapped in the physical pain, and your lymphatic system. Our energy runs our lymphatic system, and when you've got disruptions in that system, you're going to have all kinds of breakdowns and all kinds of problems, and areas won't get circulated, and areas don't have the same nourishment. And once you can change that, and I believe every single person can do this, you know, everybody's going to do it in a different way, I mean, and find their own frequency because it's your own, but everybody can ground everybody else. Are you guys back yet?
I'm back, Nikki.
Oh, okay.
Were you left alone there?
Had me talk for about a minute. He said he was trying to get the other one back on the phone. But he'd
asked, back on?
I don't know.
Jim?
I guess he's not quite back on yet.
Oh, yeah.
But he had asked us some questions about how this really just works, and it. I believe that we all have this ability, and the problem is that the more sensitive of a frequency you have, the further you take yourself down this downward spiral, you know. And once you start going down the downward spiral, just like that example in the beginning with the person who was gambling, Well, they found a way to release endorphins to neutralize the disruptions in their frequency so that they wouldn't want to kill themselves, but they had to keep doing it to make themselves feel better. And now they're feeling bad that they're doing it, which only makes
okay.
them worse.
Nikki.
Yeah.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, I think we're all back on again now. I was cut out there. I'm not sure exactly what happened. I think you were left on air, and we're able to continue on. Thanks for picking up and
sure, no problem.
Carrying on there.
Sure, and go ahead.
Well, I was noticing we got about 20 more minutes. Jim and I should take 15 to just wind up the show, but maybe we take five more minutes. You mentioned that you were going to run a video. Is that from your website?
Well, what I'm going to do is
how do people access that?
If they want to get onto these, I'm going to do these live short minutes, you know, about 15 minutes, probably three times a week, and I'll do them at different times, and anybody can log on at any of the times that it's going on. And we can be all over the world, and it'll be like a ripple effect. Everybody will be doing this. But you just have to have a computer and a speakerphone because you're going to want to be able to stand up and you're going to want to be able to watch the webinar. And if you don't have a computer, you can just listen on the phone. It's because we're all connected through the earth. So if everybody is doing this, like the ripple effect and like the person screaming and yelling that just stops, we have an effect on ourselves when we don't shift. And if we don't shift, other people will, and it'll just start this ripple effect around. But people can log on, and it's just live.
Visit your site. Is that where you'll run it from?
Yeah, what's going to happen? No, it won't be running from my site, but what's going to happen is people can log on to my website, which is vibrationregulationtraining.com. All three words are one word. And you can go to the Contact Us page. By tomorrow, this other section will be up and running, but go to the Contact Us page. Send me an email that you want to be on the know the webinars schedules, and you'll be able to get a dial-in number and a web address to be able to click on and get onto this and know exactly when it's going to be live, and be part of this. Either by tomorrow or by Monday, there's going to be a link on the home page where you just click and it'll automatically sign you up and send you the information for this, and you can send it around to as many people as possible because I do believe we can bring about world peace if we all just neutralize the disruptions to our frequency. Because don't forget, we started with a neutral frequency. All the frequencies, disruptions in your body right now are from the alternating currents, and they're not yours. You know, they're just ones you've taken on. So if you neutralize the disruptions in your frequency, you will neutralize those frequency disruptions for everybody else. It doesn't matter. Because they're not ours, you know. I mean, look at a group of people.
Yeah, it's like everyone is interconnected at subtle levels, and
we are.
And so if people.
Well, if you think about it, dysfunctional. I mean, dysfunctional is dysfunctional. You meet somebody who's an alcoholic and they drink, they're going to have the same types of characteristics. You know, they're going to be loud, boisterous, quiet, crying, angry, throwing things. All kinds. So you can list them probably on like 20 different attributes that you know that somebody has a drinking problem. Well, then you didn't do that on your own. You learned how to do that using other people's frequencies. Either a parent did it or somebody else you saw. I mean, a person doesn't.
They're all frequency patterns taken over from outside. And what you're teaching is how to get back and get strongly established in your own base frequency. I really like how your method really grounds your awareness in, I would call it, your lower story. I see a human being as having three stories, like head, heart, and the physical nature. And you especially ground someone in the physical nature by the circuit you described, from the sphincter muscles up to the to navel.
Well, and as I'm grounding, we're all on the same frequency. Every single person. See, I can feel everybody. If you take your hands now and put them, if you're still standing up, everybody, and you put your hands by your sides.
I hope everybody's not still. We forgot to tell people they could take a break.
Oh, I hope everybody. I can feel people still standing up. You see, I can feel the pressure, because what happens is since we're a magnet, and opposites attract. You see, that's why we always, you know, you meet someone and you see them and they got these quirky behaviors and you just think they're just so cute and so funny, and then a couple months later it's driving you absolutely crazy. You can't stand their behaviors now. So how could you once like it and now think it's terrible? Well, they had a disrupted frequency, you had the same disrupted frequency, but yours was more dominant, so it didn't bother you that they were doing this. Once their frequency got more comfortable around you and they got more dominant, well, now you just got shifted, and now you had the opposite effect. Did you shift to peace or fear all the time, one or the other?
Yeah.
And now they're more dominant, and you don't like it anymore. And just like that, everything about them just drives you crazy. So opposites attract, and likes repel. So as I was going through this process and being around people with high frequencies, low frequencies, disruptions, you know, major problems, when I'd be around someone with a high frequency, since my frequency is not disrupted, theirs isn't disrupted because I'm not disrupting them, and they just came out of their meltdown and they're fine, well, I get to raise up to their frequency. So my body turns into a motor. It's the most amazing feeling. You are like on a hallucinogenic. I can't even explain it. It's unbelievable. But I'm still grounded, you see. So opposites attract. We attract. They're not disrupted. I'm not disrupted. I ground them because they're not used to feeling this exact feeling that they have to do all these other things to get. So I show them how to maintain this and neutralize in our bodies and train with each other very quickly. And now I get to ride on their frequency, and I get to go up to that frequency. So it's a much different feeling when I meet someone with a low frequency that's disturbed, or somebody that has disruptions in their frequency, because my body, we innately ground, right? And then I feel like a magnet. I'm being pulled to the ground to such a degree because my frequency is lowering and the other person's is raising, and then we're in phase, and then we're at sympathetic resonance. And now, since my frequency was more dominant, not like the person who was a schizophrenic who had a higher frequency, I'm whatever goes on in my body now goes on with the other person. So I can show them very quickly how to find their frequency because my body's grounding to such a degree because they have disruptions, and I'm learning to, I've learned to neutralize disruptions. It doesn't matter who it's from.
Yeah, and we can all learn that. Thanks. I'd like to thank you for coming on, and you know, I hope people grasped and attempted the exercise you showed, because I think it's a very useful thing to try to get grounded and establish your own energy pattern. And good luck with your project. I hope that really goes well, and maybe sometime in the future we'll get you back and see how things have been going.
Okay, well, thank you.
How where your work develops.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, thank you, Nikki.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Nick.
Goodbye. Jim.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So we just got a few minutes. We've got 13 minutes here. Maybe just any final thoughts or comments, anything that Nikki's material brought up for you? Or...
Well, I guess I'd like to know more about kind of what, you know, what she was talking about in terms of the frequency. I mean, it's very interesting. I kind of bring different thoughts about different points about it. One thing, you know, that I would have been interested to hear, I think I actually got knocked off when she was replying to my question about autism and about how, I don't know if you heard that, like what she said.
No, I didn't. I got knocked off.
I didn't
off.
Either. So I don't know what she said, but I'd be interested to hear about her approach to, you know, how she deals with autistic people. But, you know, you mentioned earlier about it seemed that autism, you know, rates were much higher. Oh, they're through the roof. I mean, it's staggering how high they are compared to what they were even 20 years ago. And one of the main...
Because it used to be extremely rare, right?
Extremely rare.
Schizophrenia was one in a 100, used to be.
Yeah.
I remember that, and autism was even rarer, like, it, you know.
If you go on, if you look up Robert Kennedy Jr. On autism, Mercury in politics, you'll find some very interesting information. He's been quite prominent spokesperson. He wrote an article in Rolling Stone magazine about a year and a half ago about there's an additive in vaccines given to children called thimerosal. And it used to be that children were given three vaccinations, and in the early 90s, the number of vaccinations they were given increased dramatically, and the concerns expressed about how much mercury, because this additive contains mercury
into the vaccine.
Yeah, and
so that's a poison added to the vaccine.
Yeah,
kind of
yeah, and.
One of the Merck scientists, you know, Merck's one of the huge pharmaceutical providers.
Oh, they're called Merck?
Really? M-E-R-C-K, Merck, yeah, they're a huge pharmaceutical company,
okay.
One of the biggest in the world. A 1991 memo, Dr. Maurice Hillerman, one of the fathers of Merck's vaccination programs, warned his bosses that the six-month-year-old children administered the shots on schedule would suffer mercury exposure 87 times the government safety standards. He recommended that Thimerosal be discontinued and complained that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, which has a notoriously close relationship with the pharmaceutical industry, could not be counted on to take appropriate action as its European counterparts had. Merck ignored Hillerman's warning, and for 8 years, government officials added 7 more shots for children containing Thimerosal. This is related to all sorts of mercury poisonings, related to all sorts of neurological problems, autism, attention deficit disorder, speech delays, and other childhood neurological disorders. It estimates that children now have the rate of autism is in American children used to be 1 in 2,500. Today, the CDC places the rate at 1 in 166 or 1 in 80 in boys. 1 in 6 children is now diagnosed with a related neurological disorder.
Wow.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Last year, when Robert Kennedy...
It's amazing how sometimes these companies... that profit margin is like they don't care about the welfare of people, eh? It was like the tobacco industry, you know, like intentionally deceiving the public.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And putting all these pharmaceutical products, they put them on the market, and how well have they really been investigated and researched?
That's the big lie in products placed on the market is that, you know, the long-term effects just certainly aren't really looked at closely enough. I mean, there's not enough regulation. It's funny how people always say, oh, you know, deregulation makes business more efficient and everything. I was like, well, you know, the other side of it is that regulation is important in terms of because businesses will do what they have to do to make more money, and they don't really care, you know, if people get sick and die. I mean, there's, you know, untold examples of that.
Create sickness, and they got more pharmaceutical sales.
Well, I didn't mean just pharmaceutical industry. I mean everybody. You know, every business is, you know, they avoid anything which will cut into their costs. Like General Motors had a famous case several years ago where, you know, the protection of a gas tank on one of their vans. It would have cost them like some ridiculously small amount of money, and they factored into to the cost. Well, if a certain number of people die and we get sued, you know, the settlements will be in this range. Go ahead, we could put this plate on and protect the gas tank, but it would be more cost effective for people to die and for us to get sued.
Yeah,
and they went ahead. I mean, it's not funny. It's so absurd that you just kind of shake your head. And one of the attorneys who defended them, they just strung it out in the courts as long as they could, finally got was the great Kenneth Starr, who of course investigated Bill Clinton and spent $75 million of the American taxpayers' money chasing Bill Clinton and being the voice of morality. He was one of the attorneys who tried to stall investigations into this. There was a big thing on 60 Minutes about this. It's quite interesting. But this whole thing about autism, like I said, Robert Kennedy wrote this article in Rolling Stone magazine, and it was supposed to be featured on ABC News, and then ABC News pulled the plug on the story. If you ever watch ABC News or CBS or NBC, the nightly news, they're brought to you by a variety of pharmaceutical companies and products. You know, I mean, they're dominated by pharmaceutical advertising because of the older demographic of their audiences. So they pulled the plug on the story, and it's an important story. And they just said, oh, well, the scientific evidence is equivocal. It's not. It's like it's very, very, very strong that this stuff is dangerous and that this is responsible for the for the autism epidemic. And as it turns out, these vaccines are now used in China, and apparently they've had an explosion of autism in China also. So, you know.
My God.
Yeah. Nice world we live in. But,
okay. So Well, coming back, just to say, you know, I think this is the basic thrust of Nikki's work is like trying to come back to some very basic, like her exercise is pretty basic as a way of trying to ground in your own energies. And I think this whole aspect of self-healing, especially when there's so many disruptive influences and poisons and chemicals in our environment, we just have to, you know, I believe if we had the capacity, I believe we could all heal ourselves from within without. So I believe that's possible to human beings, and somehow we have to, especially in these chaotic times, not only the insanity of humankind, but all the poisons they're trying to spread around the earth. I think these types of methods, you know, are just so important. I'm looking forward to seeing Michael Moore's show, new movie, on the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, he's making the rounds now. He's promoting that. So I guess it must be coming out very soon if it hasn't already been released. I know it's. I've seen ads for it, so it must be on the verge of coming out.
Yeah. So that's
interesting.
Really shocking. Mercury and vaccines. So that, or it wasn't, was it mercury, but you had another word?
The drug is called, it's a preservative, it's called thimerosal.
Oh yeah, that's what the mercury's for, isn't it, as a preservative?
Yeah.
For the, is that why it's put in the, or it, is, I mean, I don't think they intentionally can't,
hopefully. It's actually described as a mercury-based preservative in children's vaccines. Yeah, so it's a mercury derivative, and you know, it's basically when, you know, the scientist in at Merck said, look, you know, this is exposing people to children to mercury exposure 87 times the government standard, and you know, like, you know what?
Yeah, he's probably no longer a scientist at Merck.
I would think that he's probably not there. Yeah, as you say, I just saw recently again the Insider about Jeffrey Wigand, you know, the whistleblower in the tobacco industry, and his whole fight to bring his story to CBS, and then CBS killed it because they didn't want to get sued by, 60 Minutes killed the story because they didn't want to get sued by Big Tobacco, you know. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah, I had actually.
Yeah. Very interesting. I mean,
Yeah.
But getting back to Nikki, like, just the whole thing about vibrations, we should pick up on that and talk about it, because, you know, like, I mean, you know, Gurdjieff's perspective is that everything is vibrations, eh? Like, everything is vibrating at its own level and on its own plane, and it's really fascinating kind of to, you know, remember that and think in terms that, you know, it's not, the world doesn't consist of stuff, it consists of vibrations.
Yeah.
We consist of vibrations, you know?
Yeah, that, it's such a complex, like, what vibrations, it's such a complex subject, all the different forms of vibration. Everything, Blavatsky, she says, all the laws of nature are, she says, seven forms of the fundamental cosmic electricity, like the divine electricity. So everything is electric, okay? She sees even gravity, Blavatsky says, is a variation on this cosmic electricity. So Blavatsky regarded, she said gravity doesn't exist, like we don't have the right understanding. She said gravity was related to the electromagnetic fluxes. In modern terms, what Blavatsky said, it's electromagnetic fluxes in the ethers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a concept now that's coming out in the new holographic physics. They don't think anymore. They think that maybe gravity doesn't exist as due to the attraction of mass upon itself. But rather, mass, gravity and inertia are really due to electromagnetic fluxes in the flux fields. And the reason we gravitate towards the Earth is because of the electromagnetic fluxes in the Earth's electromagnetic fields. So it makes gravity even an electromagnetic phenomena, that it's a variation of this. That's how Blavatsky viewed gravity 100 years ago, which is now, that's a view emerging in modern physics. So, but as you say, it's like, what is vibration? Well, everything in nature, all our structure and form, everything is electromagnetic. Everything, all processes. So it is a very complex. What do we mean by vibrations? And you know, it's a very complex field of study.
You know, just very quickly, because we're coming up to the end here, but, you know, the next time we talk, ask me about David Ray Griffin on nature, because it's very interesting, essentially, from reading him. You know, like when Sagan says, like, well, when he talks to people about God, and they say, well, you know, God, and he says people seem to think that they have an understanding of what they mean by God, but then when you ask them, you know, they think of it in certain ways, and often they don't really know what they mean by God. Well, I would say the same now, having read that about nature as scientists. Like, you know, people say, well, it's natural, or it's nature's laws. Well, what exactly do you mean by nature? Because as he points out in this book, nature means a lot of different things to a lot of different people at different times in the history of science.
The same logic and argument.
Yeah, precisely. It stands it on its head. You know, I would say that when Carl Sagan says that he means sensationistic, atheistic, and mechanistic nature. Whereas, like as Griffin says, like Alfred North Whitehead has a very different understanding of what nature is, and much more in tune with the mystical and esoteric perspective on nature. You know,
In the esoteric view, one of the things is that, like, everything is alive. Everything, life thrills through everything.
Well, that's my favorite quote from
whereas modern scientists... Sorry, Jim?
That's my favorite quote from Blavatsky.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That
I like the way
thrills through every atom, you know? Like, that's just amazing.
Oh, yeah, where she says one omniscience thrills throughout every finite point of the universe.
Yeah.
And we're all
such
finite points, and that's at the end of today's show from zero
we're a finite point. Yeah.
Like, thank Don and Doug and BBS Radio, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Nikki.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Goodbye. Remember yourself. Work with that exercise. Let's heal the world. Goodbye.